Not as coffee as I am, like, God, I try to edit the last one. I'm still working on it. It's fucking terrible.
This should have a cough filter.
That'd be great.
So if you're not feeling as coffee now, you not brewing up as much mucus?
Fucking, this is on tape. People hear this. I'm keeping this in. You started last episode. Let's do this, bitch. And I kept that in.
Okay. All right, I'll start. All
right.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Not Quite Hollywood, where we watch movies, talk about movies.
And movie-related sure things.
Movie-related things. Sometimes we go on tangents.
Usually. Folks, keep in mind, too, we do have an exclusive dirty topic on Facebook only.
What?
It's up there now.
John, did you know about this?
I did not know.
I didn't know about it either.
Did you guys forget when we were talking about it last week? It kind of got really dirty.
Is it like a cut of...
I thought we were just doing one. Or I thought we were just going
to... You had a good idea putting that little segment on Facebook only. So, the five people, follow us on Facebook.
The informal episode? Where I can, like, crack a beer during it.
Look to Not Quite Hollywood on Facebook.
And get
the dirty version.
The dirty.
It's just random. It just went off the fucking rails. It's funny.
We'll probably go off the rails again.
Usually does.
Yeah.
Good thing.
But I'm John.
I'm August.
I'm Jamie.
All right.
This is the Jesus Christ episode. 33.
Is it?
Yeah.
What?
So 33.
He died.
He's 33. And there's a famous church where there's 33 steps.
Oh, really?
Every year of his life.
Huh.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm not a religious person. I just know it. I know that fact.
That's guarantee all. The 15th and 17th steps suck. Because that's when it sucks in being in high school. Sorry. I'm not gonna...
Anyway.
Come on.
No. Wait, how does that work, though? Because he died for 3 days.
That's not included. It's years.
The years of his life.
Yeah. But, I mean, during that year, do they make, like, the step extra long? Or they cut it short, and then, like, there's a gap, and then this step continues?
Let's ask Mel Gibson.
All right.
Let's ask Jesus.
Jesus?
How many steps?
Holy fuck, Tommy.
Tommy, like, acrobatic cat.
Nope. He just made you bleed.
This is the longest introduction in history.
Anyway, today, community movie will be High Fidelity, my pick.
Yeah.
Jamie's got something planned.
Do I? Yeah, my movie's Don't Think Twice.
Don't Think Twice. And August, yours is?
Gojira. Godzilla.
Can you speak American, please?
Godzilla.
Thank you.
But which version of Godzilla? Or both?
That's for later.
Later? Ooh,
when I talk about it.
1998, Godzilla.
1998.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite.
Well, guess what? You're starting then.
Oh, I'm starting now.
Gojira.
So... way back in my childhood, for Christmas one year, my parents bought me a DVD set where it has 3 or 4 Godzilla movies, and then there's Rodan. Rodan's spin-off movie where it's all about Rodan. I am going to go see Shin Godzilla, the new one, October 11th, down in the Boston area, and I am super fucking pumped for that. And so I was like, you know what, I need to go back and I need to go watch some Godzilla movies before I go see this new one. And I was having a sleepless night and I grabbed Godzilla King of Monsters and popped it into the old PS4.
It's old.
Started up and there was the American guy. And it was like having his voice over and just something just kind of felt off about the whole movie. And it definitely felt off when it got to this one scene where it has American reporter going up to a bunch of people on the stretcher. And then, like, this Japanese lady comes up, and the reporter talks to her or whatever, and then it shows her face. And then and when it returns to him, it just shows the back of her head. Like, they don't even put her in kind of like a side profile, which back in the 1950s, you know, that's what they always did.
Yeah, sure.
If you got two characters on there, you always have to see at least both of their faces a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, man, this seems really off. And I just shut it off. And I was like, I'm just going to go and try to get some sleep and then try to pick this up some other time. So then I talked with John about it. That I was like going to start watching this new Godzilla in preparation for Shin Godzilla. And he told me, he's like, oh, is that the one with American Reporter? And I said, Yeah.
Which was played by Raymond Burr.
Raymond Burr. I don't know much about Raymond Burr.
Aaron's great grandson.
Perry Mason.
Oh. Okay.
Okay, anyway. I remember being young watching it going, that's Perry Mason.
because you used to watch Perry Mason when it was live on TV, right?
Yeah. Because I'm that old.
Oh, damn. Oh, wow.
It's like the 50s.
That was reruns. But.
Yeah.
I did not know that there were two different edits for this movie. And it just kind of like blew me away a little bit. And I was like, you know what? I really don't want to go back to this American version where it felt really off and just seemed just like a normal monster, you know, kind of movie. And so I went online and I was able to find a decent stream of it. Audio, they had like a reverb on it. So sometimes you'd get hit by double voices in both ears. And it's just really weird and bizarre sounding. And so I watched the 1954 Godzilla version. And holy hell. It was great. It was fantastic. Even watching that first 15 minutes of the American version, kind of remembering a little bit of it when the first time I watched it, the Japanese version is entirely different. It's crazy. Because the American version, everything is told through the American reporter. You're always following him. But the Japanese version, there isn't really any central character. It's more about the nation having to deal with this monstrous force and having to deal with it. And so I like that a lot more, because then it doesn't seem more of like just, oh, it's a Monster Mash movie. Mm-hmm. Though, you know, the later Godzilla's kind of turned more into Monster Mashes. But it was really kind of eye-opening and being like, I didn't realize that this much better version existed. My whole entire life up to this point has been a lie.
So is it interstitial shots of this reporter Raymond Burr in the other movie, or is it a lot different? Like, do they add more Americanized stuff to it and then incorporate somehow the original plot?
Because I didn't watch fully of it, but I read up a little bit on it, and they said that they kind of took out a lot of the scenes. Weird. So that they could put them in there. Because, you know, they didn't have, like, that technology to do, like, yeah, composite images of just, like, him just sticking them in the scene. And so they probably had to cut out a lot of it.
Hmm.
And, like, any time he's on screen, that's probably the original. And then any scene with him in it is, like, the new scene. And they try to, you know, do that inner cutting of having the original actors from the movie, but just looking really bizarre and strange. Well, with his scene setups.
From what I read is that with the American version and sticking Raymond Burr in there, it totally screwed up, like, the pacing and everything for the
film. Oh, yeah, definitely.
It felt disjointed. It didn't feel like it flowed as well as the original.
And it definitely does, because in the American version, it starts out with him waking up in the destruction or whatever, and then going to this hospital and where there's all these other people. The whole entire time, he's having a voiceover, and it was really freaking annoying and having that voiceover. Then they, like, cut back to when the actual event, but you didn't really see that much of a buildup is what there is in the original Gojira. Because what I liked about the original Gojira is that there's that buildup where there's tension.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, the ship was destroyed, so now we're going to send out some other ships to investigate. Those ships get destroyed. Then all of a sudden this town, they start along the shore, they start getting, like, Godzilla stomping through and then progresses in there. Whereas it seemed like in the American version, it was more like Godzilla appears kind of throughout.
Yeah.
So they essentially Power Rangered it.
Yeah.
That's what Power Rangers was notorious for. They took this other show and threw American actors in the other scenes, and they had the same fighting scenes from the Japanese versions. Mm-hmm. But of course they never take off their helmets.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. First couple seasons anyway.
Well, it's funny how America tends to do this with this, or America Studios, I guess, with this idea of we got to Americanize things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we talked before about, like, foreign films that were amazing films, but they won't just bring those films to America and release them. They want to make their own version with American actors. And yeah, it's just, don't do that.
I mean, let the right one in.
Exactly. That's the one I was thinking of.
Which they turned to Let Me In. And
I haven't seen Let Me In.
The girl with the dragon tattoo, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, and they want to do...
I can't say anything about that one, because it's Fincher.
It's the same.
Yeah,
it's Fincher and Reznor doing the score. Yeah. Like, that's kind of perfect for that. But
yeah,
what was the one that you were saying?
The other one that they want to do is
I Saw the Devil.
I saw the devil.
Yeah, that reminds me. They did Old Boy.
Yeah,
they did
Old Boy. It's like, stop it, stop with that.
Spike
shit.
Lee. Yeah,
but doesn't stop with that, with the Americanizing of things, and especially with that idea of we have to have a central character to follow. Because if you read the book World War Z,
mm-hmm.
okay,
mm-hmm.
by Max Brooks. It's one of the best books I've ever read. I mean, wow. And there's no central character. It's just like jumps chapter to chapter to chapter with different groups of people experiencing the zombie apocalypse in different parts of the world, mm-hmm. and ways they've either failed in stopping it or succeeded in stopping it. And it was really interesting just to see all these different perspectives. So when they said they were making a movie, the first thing in my head was, they can't make a movie out of this and have it be 2 hours long. It would be great if it was a miniseries on Showtime or HBO.
Oh, yeah.
And then when they said there was going to be one lead character who was going to travel all over the... I was just like, no.
Brad Pitt.
I'm like, you killed it. You killed the whole thing with World War Z. So we still do that in America. Yeah. We still have this idea we have to have a central character to follow.
And, Godzilla was hurt by that.
Mm.
Because, you know, it just seems like a movie that is more about the blob. And people who are listening, if you're a Godzilla fan, you already probably know what Godzilla is a stand-in for. He's a stand-in for the bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where it kind of ties in about this country having to deal with that. And it's like not... They don't separate what happened during World War II from the movie. Because there's even a character in there that he lost an eye due to the destruction. Or they talk about how they were just getting their city together or getting Japan back together, and now Godzilla's come through and is ruining it.
There was a good thematic element behind it, like, you know, a social commentary, and then America's like, it's ours now.
Yeah,
it's
ours. We can't talk about Perry Mason. We can't talk about those bombs that we dropped in Japan. Let's erase that plot element.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I was doing a little research about like the differences, I just kind of scanned it a little bit, but they were talking about at the very end, and the big difference between them is Godzilla, the American one, it's got like a very upbeat ending. Raymond Burr, you know, says like, and now we can return to tomorrow and live again. Whereas at the end of Gojira, they talk about how Godzilla may have been the only one of his species. And that maybe, you know, if we keep testing nuclear weapons, maybe another thing like Godzilla will come around. And at the end, there's no cheering. Like, they kill Godzilla, but they're just like very dour. Yeah. They're just like, oh, we don't feel good about ourselves.
This was shitty all around.
Yeah.
There was no winners here.
And the way that they, I guess that's spoilers, the way they kill, it's a really old movie, so fuck spoilers. Gojira is killed by the oxygen destroyer, which sucks out all, or turns all oxygen into liquid. And they go to the scientists and they're like, hey, can we use what you've created to kill Godzilla? And he's like, I didn't want anyone to know about this until I knew that I could use it for good. And then he's like really against using it because he's like, you know, it can create mass destruction. He's like, it's on par with the atomic bomb. And so there was kind of that mirroring of what Oppenheimer was like when he made the atomic bombs. He was like, yeah, I become death, the destroyer of worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so by removing that from that movie, it just really kills it. And even though I have it, I don't think I could ever watch that original Godzilla. And I mean, I know I can watch the others because they're not going to do some American edit for every single fucking Godzilla movie. But yeah, that one, nah, can't.
It's like watching a cheap knockoff.
Yes.
But the best one, we have to agree, is the 1998 film.
No,
come on. It looked the best. You had little babies? It was a she? The whole time? We didn't know that. We thought it had a big swinging fucking Godzilla dick, and no, it's a nice little mother trying to make her own living in New York City. The original heartland of America.
And Matthew Broderick.
So, yeah, I definitely would suggest checking out and watching the original Gojira, 1954.
You've opened my eyes. Before you guys said it, I never knew that was another one, so that's awesome.
Pretty much any version of You Get It Now is just going to be that stupid ass Raymond Burr. So that's Gojira. And the good thing is they said a lot of people in Japan, they have said that Shin Godzilla goes back to Gojira.
I was going to bring it up because I watched the trailer and it looked very much like there's not like one central person they're following around. It's just the city and the government and Godzilla and just trying to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're saying that it's more of like a critique upon Japan relying upon outside sources such as America to solve their problems.
Interesting. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, they're not relying back on being like nuclear weapons are bad.
Yeah.
Now it's more of like, it's modernizing the idea.
Could also be an allegory for taking back their character from us.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They do that every time, though. Yeah. When in 1990, when the shitty 1998 American version came out, Godzilla 2000 came out. It was like, thank you for doing that.
Godzilla 2000 was great. Yeah. And they didn't they do one called like the Final Wars where they had
I think they did one after
where they had Zilla go against their Godzilla and
something like that
like
oh really
yeah and it beats the shit out of Zilla.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
We spoke about it earlier too, the speaking of American versions, like King Kong versus Godzilla. In the American version, King Kong wins, and in the Japanese version, Godzilla wins. So I like how Japan's always like, if you're gonna take our shit and do something, we're going to make it better.
Yeah. You know. I mean, you're all right, Gareth Edwards, but...
We'll see how Rogue One is before we make a judgment on him.
Oh, no, I know Rogue One looks great.
It does.
But then they changed things.
Yeah.
And they had to change the composer because the fucking score didn't match the movie. Now it's more lighter tone.
As long as they don't take Donnie Yen out.
They did.
Did they take Donnie
Yen out? Just kidding.
Or there's all these scenes where it's just like... They blank. Someone should have been there, but it's just blank.
CGI, there's nothing there.
Who's that other guy who's playing the Admiral? I love him. He's in a lot of great movies.
But speaking of great jobs...
Great jobs.
Because we don't have a fucking segue to save our lives anymore.
I don't think that I could drum up a segue. I don't even... If I thought twice about it, I would be able to think of a good segue.
Our movies are way too different for segues, I think.
I mean, drum up? It's not about drumming. I get that. I think twice. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So, Jamie, what was your movie?
Goddamn. My movie is the second film from the comedian Mike Birbiglia is Don't Think Twice. And his first film, if you remember, is 2012, Sleepwalk With Me, based on real events in his life. He has, like, this issue where when he's in REM sleep, there's, like, a chemical your body makes to paralyze you, so you're not going to act out your dreams. Well, he doesn't have it, so he acts out his dreams in times of stress. So... It was a pretty cool eye-opening thing. It was about his rise. This coincided with his rise in stand-up comedy. And so it's a very autobiographical film. He just changes his name to, like, I think guy like Matt Birbiglia or something.
Oh,
really
my God.
Very obvious. And then this film is his response to that film. So people were coming up to him after that movie came out. I'm like, thank you. You inspired me to do stand-up. He's like, that's not what the movie was about. The movie is about trying to find success in what you're interested in, what you're good in. And so he wanted to make a movie about failure because it's just as important to look at failure than it is at success. So this is revolves around a comedy like improv troupe. Let me try to find their name.
Is it a real comedy?
No, it's not. This is fully fiction. It's an improv group named The Commune out of New York City. And the cast is Kate Micucci, Keegan-Michael Key from Key and Peele.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Birbiglia is also in there. There's a couple other people. And, of course...
Who's that chipmunk girl?
That's not nice. It's Kate Micucci.
It's Kate Micucci?
She is...
Micucci is the best last name.
That is...
Yeah. She's adorable.
Oddly attractive.
She's adorable, and she is very funny with her partner.
Oh, yeah.
She's in a comedian comedy musical team, Garfunkel and Oates.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're fucking hilarious.
You get to see her boobs in this new Netflix show.
Which one?
I don't know the name of the Netflix show. I can't remember.
Micucci's boobs?
Micucci's boops, yeah.
I mean, we've seen her part. Never mind. Mr. Skin, like.
What is that show?
Master of None?
No. It's a new one.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
I'll figure it out. Later.
One of their 8,000 new shows.
Yeah. And then, of course, one of the lead actress who is dating Keegan-Michael Key in the film is Jillian Jacobs from Community.
Yeah.
And, so these people are, it's almost like a breeding ground for characters because the whole goal is like for everybody on the team is to make it to Weekend Live, which is the very thinly veiled version of Saturday Night Live. And they always watch and they always make fun of how it's not really funny anymore. Like, you know, like they're saying, was it ever really funny? Or we just as a kid liked it and thought it was funny and now we're like, it's not as funny as it used to be. That was a pretty interesting scene anyway. But they talk about the, you know, every time like there's a recruiter from Weekend Live, Keegan-Michael Key's character, Jack Mercer, always, like, plays it up, and he's always trying to get the attention. Like, he breaks his improv, like, focus and just, like, does, like, these sketches and these impressions. And then, but eventually, the producers come back. The commune's location is being shut down, so they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with their lives now. And but Jack and his girlfriend get auditions for Weekend Live, and then Jack makes it on the show. So then he becomes like this rising star in SNL like fandom, and then everybody else is kind of like picking up the pieces. Like, what's their life mean now? Like, one of the other guys, his dad's dying, and like this other girl, she's super rich. Her parents always pay for her stuff, but she doesn't really like do anything. She doesn't have a job. Everybody has like this really interesting like perspective on how they're getting by, and when Jack gets big in the show, it revolves around everybody else's jealousy, and then looking internally and what are they good at. They try to do their things, they try to really their specific talents, they try to pop, like they start separating and falling apart, and then so Jack gets further and further from the group as his job is taking up his life, because they write constantly, they're always gone. And him and his girlfriend are drifting apart. And it's an interesting look at success and failure, because, I mean, I think anybody who has a creative mind has to see this film, because it shows the other side of the coin, what could happen. And it's an interesting way, because, I mean, you should always try to do something you want to do, but know that it doesn't always work out. Mm. A lot of people mm-hmm. don't have success.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to see, in obviously this fictionalized way, these different people's experiences with failure or success, and how you can interpret that emotion. So it's really cool. I liked it a lot. I mean, I recommend it for anyone else who wants to see it. But questions or anything?
Is it funny?
That's very funny.
That was my question.
It's very funny. I mean, they worked together for 6 weeks doing actual improv. And all of the improv scenes you see are from that set. And surprisingly, they had a good chemistry. Jillian Jacobs has never done any kind of improv or any stand-up comedy at all. And she fit right in. She like really went into the whole improv. It's just... It's really good stuff. I'm surprised that it worked out so well. Alcoholic father glass.
The alcoholic.
What are you drinking, Dad?
Water.
Well, after watching Don't Think Twice, learning about failure, I picked up drinking.
Gotta drink some more.
Yeah, I know I'll succeed at drinking.
If you can't drink your way to the top, then why bother?
Yeah?
I would use another verb. I'd say suck your way to the top, but you know. August and I.
Why are you dragging me into this?
I'm just seeing what you'd say. It's great. Okay. Yeah, it's a very funny movie.
I thought you said one of the guys from Key and Peele is dating in real life.
In that movie, they're dating.
Oh, sorry. Because I thought they were gay in real life.
No. No? Jordan just got married to Chelsea Peretti. She's a comedian. And Keegan, I think he has a girlfriend or something. Maybe a wife. No, they're not gay. Yeah.
Thought I saw that.
They play a lot of gay characters, as comedians are wont to do.
I mean, as a two improv duo, like, I'm pretty sure they experimented at least once.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, maybe. I thought I saw an interview. Maybe it wasn't them two, but I thought I saw.
Yeah.
I guess I'm misinformed.
Might be Mike Birbiglia?
Unless they were doing it. Maybe it was a skit I was watching.
Yeah, that's probably it.
That's probably what. Or they're interviewed somewhere and they just...
Mm-hmm. What if you don't like Key and Peele in that kind of humor? Like,
so
I'm not really into improv, to be honest.
Well, Key and Peele are sketch. Well, improv is...
I know. Like, I'm not into Key and Peele and improv.
See, the Key and Peele thing wouldn't be an issue because it's not that type of humor.
Okay.
It is wholly improv humor, though. So if you don't like improv, it may be hard for you. But I think the message is worth watching regardless. And you'll probably get a chuckle or two out of it.
Yeah.
Because it's not just like cliche improv. It's really well done.
Is this movie out in theaters right now, or is it in, or was it?
Super limited release. I emailed the head of Railroad asking, as soon as I heard it was coming out, like it was like just LA, New York, and it was slowly coming out over the country. And I'm like, when are you going to get this? And it took about a month, but it came there. And I wouldn't see it coming anywhere else. I mean, it'll probably be in VOD pretty soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's good.
I want to see it. I do.
I'm an aunt on it. You're an aunt. I don't know. I watched the Mike Birbiglia stand up and it was decent. I'll be honest,
I don't think he's that funny a comedian. Mm-hmm. But I think the premise of this movie and everything is something I'd like to see.
Yeah, I haven't watched much of his stuff. What I did watch was alright. Yeah. He's no Cedric the Entertainer.
Okay. Or Dave Chappelle.
I was joking about Cedric. He's no Dane Cook.
I remember when Dane Cook took over the world.
Yeah, like 10 years ago.
And you know what? I don't know who's worse, Dane Cook or Jeff Foxworthy, Bill Engvall, and Larry the Cable Guy.
I definitely say they're worse.
I think they're worse. I think Dane Cook's earlier stuff, when he was just talking about random weird shit, was hilarious.
Before he ripped people off?
Before he started ripping people off, before he turned everything into, I'm super popular, so all my jokes are about me getting laid. That got annoying.
Super famous. Anybody else? Sorry, my friend.
Is it this?
Sorry, Claire, back in. No.
No, that's
no, the pink one. It's the two fingers.
What the fuck is that supposed to be? I've never watched
this. The super finger. Because it's two of the middle fingers.
Oh, yeah. So
it's more intense. It's
super.
It's more.
What? Fuck you.
And everyone in the audience was like, oh. Or.
Dang quick. No segue, I don't think could work for that.
No segue?
I have a segue into my own movie.
Oh.
What's speaking of movies that are comedies but are also about shitty things that happen and what you're going to do with your life when things fall apart.
Great segue.
High Fidelity. Yep. Starring John Cusack, Jack Black, a bunch of other people I don't remember the
Catherine
names.
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Joan Cusack.
Tim Robbins.
Yeah.
Very funny.
That segue was music to my ears.
I have a feeling August didn't like this movie before we even discuss it. He's not saying anything.
Your silence is deafening.
Are you done introducing this movie, or are we going to straight?
Well, let's straight to talk. I'm going to say something. High Fidelity is one of my favorite movies when I was in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Because the main character, John Cusack, dealing with the breakup and then reminiscing on all his other relationships that had fallen apart and trying to find an answer as to why this always happens to him, was very relatable when I was in my 20s. I'm 39 now, so I'm watching it again through older eyes. Where I used to, like, relate to the character and be like, yeah, I know what that's like. That's shitty. That's blah, blah, blah. Now that I'm older, I look at it like, you're being a shithead. You know, when I look at this character, I'm like, you're being a big shithead.
Yeah.
Yes.
I still enjoy the movie.
Yeah.
But it's through, like, different eyes now.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I still enjoy it, I still enjoy the comedy. I think Jack Black was hilarious in it. And, yeah, to go from there, what are your opinions before we get into, like, the meat of it?
Well, I feel like since John flung shit at me, saying, I think August didn't even like this movie before we started talking about it. I actually liked it.
All right.
I was weary.
I didn't think you would like it.
Because it's not
your
like,
kind of movie.
I don't like Cusack.
Yeah.
That's one of the main things. Like And I don't like Jack Black. I just find him weird. And no, I really liked it. I can't think why I like it. No, I like the story. And like it's dealing of relationships. 500 Days of Summer is a bit of a ripoff of High Fidelity, just with the use of, you know, kind of like independent music during that time.
Yeah.
And also like about going back into past relationships or like going into the past and getting a different perspective on the whole entire thing. I watched the trailer in the extras because it's been a long time since I've watched a trailer from back then. I was like, I want to watch a trailer before I watch this. Mm-hmm. And in the trailer, the prominent song is I'm Walking on Sunshine, Doesn't It Feel Good?
Okay.
That appears in the movie.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, okay, I may not like this movie at all, but I love how they handle it in the movie.
Oh, yeah. It was...
Because they made fun of it. They're like, no, turn that shit off.
I like... And I do... I'm sorry. I like Jack Black in this. And I love when he's yelling at him to turn it down. And he's... Jack Black's just like, it won't
turn up any higher.
Yeah, it won't go any higher.
Because back then, in like the 90s, if you had a fucking music or a movie trailer, you're going to have that song appear. Yeah. And the fact that they did that and then they did a turn on it, I love that. So that's my impression. Yes, I liked it. Okay. Jamie.
I, too, had never seen it prior to this viewing. So having never seen the film, I had heard quotes from the film many times. I had heard it was like a cult classic, very music influenced. I mean, Brian was a fan of it because he spoke about it when he was here. Like he lived this experience.
Life, yeah.
Daddy Cool Records.
Well, what's cool with what Brian had mentioned was like the movies, record store movies that came out at the time, like Empire Records and stuff, weren't realistic to what actually owning like a little independent record store was like. And High Fidelity, he had mentioned,
like that was
That's what it looked like. Yeah. Continue, Jamie.
I really enjoyed this film. It was is instantly quotable, and I see why it was quoted for so many years. One of the bigger reasons why I love the film is because John Cusack's character is a fucking shithead.
Yes.
And he doesn't realize it. And at the beginning of the film, as an audience, as a viewer, you're trying to, you know, relate to this character. You're trying to, you know, he's the main character. You're supposed to follow the main character and root for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then halfway through, or hell, not even halfway through, he's really challenging you in your perspective. And he even says, you know, I am an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, even if he had a different explanation for, like, how he cheated on his girlfriend, or, you know, how that, you know, he found out after the fact she was pregnant, it's still, he realized he's still an asshole, because he explained everything else away, except he still never said a thing about his cheating. Like, I cheated. Like, he never...
Yeah.
And he just realized that, I am an asshole. He owned
up to that, yeah.
Yeah. And that's a pretty daring thing to do for a film, and I appreciate that.
Well, what I like about it is it takes the shitty things that happen in relationships, and in most movies, it's always, like, black and white. Mm. You know what I mean? Oh, one problem, and we just gotta solve it, and we're back together, blah, 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 happily ever after. This movie really gets into what relationships are like and what happens in relationships and the realistic approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, the whole, once they break up, and then he's having, like, his meltdowns and stuff like that, and then he's doing everything he can to try to get her, just to get her attention back to him. And then when he asks her if she slept with the Ian character yet, and she says, "I haven't yet," and he immediately thinks, "Oh, that's it, we're getting back together."
Yeah,
because
it's not yet.
But in relationships, that's the way it goes. When you have, like, a breakup with somebody and you think maybe there's a chance, any little thing will make you feel like you're on top of the world. But what does he do after he finds out that they haven't slept with? He immediately goes out and sleeps with Lisa Bonet's character.
Yeah.
And then doesn't, like, feel bad about it. Mm-mm. But then when she eventually tells him, "I did sleep with Ian," he has another meltdown.
Yep, and he freaks out. Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it, we all do that.
Yes.
We all think like that. Like, how many times have you, like, were pursuing a girl, and you were like, "I really want to get this girl, you know, who's she talking to, who's she dating, blah, blah, blah." Meanwhile, you might have three or four girls that you're talking to, you know what I mean, that you're trying to, you know, you think eventually I'm going to get one of them or something like that, you know. So his perspective of what I do isn't wrong, but if she does the same thing that I'm doing, then she's wrong.
She's a bitch for it.
She's a bitch for it.
But and I'm that's not an asshole.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's great that at the end of the movie, he does realize what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they finally get back together, and that
the reporter
girl starts flirting with him, and he starts making her mixtapes, all of a sudden it just hits him, like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, he's setting himself back up to go through the same scenario again. And that's when he has that realization of, that's not real, that's a fantasy somewhere.
Exactly.
And I gotta just stop it now.
And I love how his talk about that fantasy is like, I am here with you. We have our problems.
Yeah.
And when I fantasize about her, we have our problems, but they're just like small little insequential little things. Like, oh, we bought each other the same Christmas present. Yeah. He's like, because that's fantasy. That's
the fantasy. And he has a great monologue at the bar where he's saying, things with her aren't, or Lauren's her name, things with Lauren aren't spectacular and, like, mind-blowing. They're good.
Yeah.
Because they're just good and they're steady. You know, they're steady good.
Laura, not Lauren.
Laura. And he should just accept that, and that's what it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I do love the whole, even the interactions, like when Laura talks to her friend, who's played by Joan Cusack, and again, Jamie mentioned it, she explains her rationale for the breakup, and it's not 100% accurate and truthful.
Yeah.
And then he explains his version, and you're kind of like, okay, if you hear both sides of this, you're not going to be able to believe either one of them. Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it... You know, it's all ambiguous, you know, how those things play out.
No one's right, no one's wrong.
No one's really right, no one's wrong. But everyone's got a part to play in what happened. So she's not 100% innocent either. Because she really, when I used to watch this movie, it pissed me off because the fact that they used to listen to Ian have sex upstairs.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of that, she was already thinking about having sex with Ian upstairs while they're still together. It's like, you're a bitch. You want to say that, you're a bitch. You know what I mean?
That's shitty. She's like, I wish I could be so lucky. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's like, don't say that. That was horrible.
Yeah.
I do like a lot the scenes where, I mean, John Cusack and Jack Black are trying to work together, and they always get bickering back and forth. But when, after he says, she hasn't slept with Ian yet. So he's like asking, if I said to you this sentence, I haven't seen Evil Dead 2 yet, what would you say? He's like, well, to me, it would mean you're a liar.
Yeah.
You've seen it twice, once with Laura. Oops.
Yeah.
That's me and Dick, remember? Like, it just... Because he couldn't understand the concept of what he was saying. I just fucking love that.
Well, there's part of me when I watch that scene, I think Jack Black knows what he's actually asking.
Yeah.
And he's just being a dick about it. You know what I mean?
Prolonging it.
Especially when he says, well, if you said you haven't seen it yet, then obviously you would have rushed out to see it, so you probably don't want to. And then John Cusack's, like, relieved. And then he goes... But yet.
You know, yet. That word. And it's just like, fuck. Those are my favorite parts of the movie, is when they were there at that record shop.
It's,
and to be honest, I don't remember a whole lot in those record shops, because what I loved doing was like looking in the background.
Oh, and look at all the shit on the walls and shit.
Yeah. Or just like even the records. Yeah. Like I saw him walk in and I was like, oh, there's the Minutemen.
Yeah.
There's King Crimson. There's Iron Butterfly. And this one right here. I had to rewind because I did not think I saw the cover. One of my favorite bands and favorite punk bands, The Mummies.
The Mummies, yeah.
Their album, Fuck CDs, It's The Mummies, is right there in one of the front things. And I was just like, oh my God, the fucking Mummies.
And that's what's awesome, because it felt authentic. It felt like an authentic independent record store. Even when they're having their discussions with customers about things and stuff, like, oh, you gave up on this because of that? And this band took, well, who was it? What band was it? Like The Clash, or The Clash quit, and then this band, you know, picked up where they left off, and I can't believe you don't know this band. And these are all real bands.
Yeah. The Clash one was about Green Day.
Was it Green Day?
Yeah, because Dick's character, which I like his archetype, is just being that one who, where he knows all of like the information and where they got influences. But he's talking to that girl and he's like, Green Day, their influence was The Clash and some other finger hand.
And then he plays it, and then some guy in the record store is like, is that new Green Day? But one of my favorite scenes is when that guy, the geek, they call him the geek, comes in because he wants a specific record.
Oh, yeah.
Frank Zap, or no, it's Captain Beefheart.
Okay, Captain Beefheart.
That was weird. I was like, what?
And Jack Black's character is just like ignoring him, you know, brushing him off. And finally, you know, he's got enough of dealing with him. So he goes and gets the record and shows it to him. The geek's all like, you know, flipping out over this record, and he goes, well, how much do you want for it? And Jack Black takes the record back and goes, oh, I'm not selling it today.
This week.
And the guy just like freaks out and runs out the store.
Yeah, because he's like, you said that last week.
So he's been doing this to this guy for a while. But then that other guy was like, I'll buy it for 40. And they're like, okay. And they give it to him. He's like, why would you sell it to me and not that other guy? And he goes, they go, because you're not a geek. And then he explains the whole, you guys are like elitist snobs.
Yeah.
But and they're like, no, we're not. And he does some explanation of, you know, saying, yeah, you are. You're a bunch of... Which I think about, we had a discussion about that, the idea of...
Elitism. Yeah.
Yeah.
What goes into elitism.
Yeah.
And...
Like, I think this is better. You're not worthy of knowing it.
Exactly, yeah. You
know? Yeah, they're always doing that, because every time you're like, this is really great, I know.
Yeah.
They're always cocky about it.
Or that, like...
Sell this five records of the copy of this record.
Yeah. Or the lame white guy shows up for a record for his daughter.
In Jack Black's. Oh, yeah.
First he says, we have it. And then he says, okay. And he says, can I buy it? And he said, like, no.
He's like, go to the mall and buy it.
Yeah, we don't sell that pappy crap.
I've been looking at, like, this different mindset now. John's talking about the... So John has this theory about Chaos Zen. I won't go into it. He can explain it. I'm not good at that. Stuff, but there's a scene near the end where he's talking to Laura, and I'll explain. August is inquisitive.
Chaos Den?
Chaos Zen.
Zen.
It's my school of
thought. Yeah.
Sorry. They're talking about the fantasy behind, like, he can't stay with Laura or any girl long enough because there's a new girl comes along. It's like the fantasy of that other girl is so enticing, he just goes for it, which is another trait of an asshole.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm tired of the fantasy because it doesn't really exist and there are never really any surprises and it never really delivers. And she finishes the sentence. Like, yeah, I'm tired of it and tired of everything else for that matter, but I don't ever seem to get tired of you. Like, it was a cool idea. Like, he's always looking at other things like they have, like you talked about, similar with the problems. You know, they have lingerie, but she's like, I have lingerie. He's like, yeah, but they have lingerie, great lingerie, but they also have, you also have the cotton underwear that's been washed 1,000 times.
Yeah.
But they have it too, but it's not my fantasy. My fantasy is the best possible experience with this person, and it obviously never comes out that way.
An elitist attitude.
Yeah, exactly.
And the best character, because he goes through a list of the top five women that have, that broke up with him, even though one of them he broke up with.
Yep.
And he goes to find them, tracks them down, because he wants answers on why they left him.
Yeah.
And the best example of what you're saying is Catherine Zeta-Jones' character, where when he was younger and in college, she was like this awesome, she's so smart and intellectual and worldly and knows everything and blah, 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 and all this. And then when he finally gets back to meet her again, and he goes to her house, and she's got all those boring yuppies there and all this shit. And I remember even watching it the first time thinking, she's fucking boring. She doesn't really know shit. And he has that revelation. She's nothing. Like, she's... dumb. Annoying. She's annoying and dumb. She's nothing to her, you know. So that kind of like set the ball rolling for him realizing how good he has it with Laura, you know. So
yeah, I think his words were like, "She's a terrible person."
Yeah, she's a terrible person. Yeah,
and she was. And then of course when he admitted he was looking for answers, like he's looking through all his life, she's just all pissed off. I knew it. Yeah, yeah. Like she can't even give him a straight answer. It's just such a like a selfish way of looking at things.
Yeah. But the evolution of his character, which is great, is it's a small scene, although they end the movie with it, was his distrust of Barry. Like, he does not think Jack Black's character is talented, doesn't think he can sing. So, of course, Jack Black's like, we got a band called Sonic Death Monkeys, and we're going to play at your girlfriend's little show thing. You know, and he's just like, please don't play.
I'll pay you not to.
Because he's trying to promote the album that those two kids had put together, which was really good. But he was afraid that if Barry sang there, then everyone would leave and no one would stay for the other album. But then when Barry starts singing, he realizes, holy shit, you know, I was wrong. Yeah. So it's like all these revelations to him, like, I've been looking at things wrong, I've been judging people wrong, I've been...
Yeah. Well, not even that, but like he was talking about how to make the perfect mixtape, like for Laura, it's like, I'm making one in my head, stuff that makes her happy. He finally can't think about somebody else, but when he was explaining that, when Barry's singing... You know, he's open with Let's Get It On. You want to open with a good, solid hit and then, like, work your way in and then, like, have a little cool-down period and then bring it back up. And, like, Barry understood that.
Yeah.
Barry was talking about, you know, he was nailing what, in John Cusack's mind, is the right thing to do. And, like, it really gave him, like, almost like a respect for him.
Yeah, he played...
just his talent.
Jack Black played a character, one of those characters that you think is... not important, or you think is dumb, or you think it is, but when you actually watch it and watch what listen to what he's saying, he's actually really smart. He's actually giving him good advice on things.
Yeah.
Like, even, like, I didn't think that one scene where they listen to the two skateboard punks album, and you can tell it just kills Jack Black to say, it's fucking good.
Good, yeah.
It's fucking good.
I love how he's just looking, he's just like, it's good. I'm gonna play a little game.
Okay, Jigsaw.
Okay, it's not really a game. So... in that record shop, there's three men, each of them a different archetype. On this podcast, there are three men that are different. Who is who?
If I have to go by relationship history, I'd have to say John Cusack.
Yeah, definitely.
You're Dick.
I'm Dick?
You're Dick.
I see you as Dick, and I see him as Jack Black.
But he's the one with like all that information. He's knowing all about the who did what in what movie and starting this and starting that.
Yeah, but who's the elitist asshole in the group? August.
So I would be Jack Black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except you're not as boisterous and annoying in your eyes.
In my eyes, yeah.
In your eyes.
All right. So there we go. John Cusack.
John's John.
Dick. And I'm Jack Black.
Because I can speak from personal experience. You ever go to an ex and ask why they broke up with you, you won't get an answer.
No.
You won't get any explanation.
I.
Period.
Yeah, we had the conversation. Yeah. I have never gone to an ex and asked them why they broke up with me.
Sure, it's really fun.
It is. I've done it.
Should I do that tonight?
Call her now. Call right now. Live on
my recent ex.
Do it.
I don't even have her phone number. I would have to text
Stalker.
I would have to text her Stalker. Current boyfriend.
Text her. Text
and
her boyfriend.
Ask him and be like,
ask him to ask her.
Yeah.
Ask Tim Robbins. Ask Ian.
Ask Ian.
Ask Ian.
Can I talk to your girlfriend?
Ray.
Just ask your girlfriend, why did she really break up with me? Oh, is it because she worked a lot better with you and you guys had the same interests? Oh.
That's a boring answer.
It's fucking true. I had a girlfriend come up to me like a year later and tell me.
Openly gave you that information?
Yeah. I didn't even ask for it. She just said,
fuck you, August.
This is why I broke up with you. And I was just like, okay.
Like, I didn't ask.
Yeah.
What was the reason, if you don't...
Her mom and her stepdad were getting divorced.
Oh. Because that had everything to do with you? Did they get divorced because
of
you?
No. But she just said, like, she got really, like, really weird about it. And then she started immediately dating a guy after she broke up with me.
Weird.
And got engaged to him.
It's like high school.
Yes, I have a history of that, too. Women breaking up with me, and then the next guy they meet immediately is like, this is the guy I married.
That's the plot of that shitty movie Good Luck Chuck with Dane Cook.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Hey.
But she actually didn't end up getting married to that guy.
Okay.
So, yeah. I saw a picture of a ring, and I was just like, oh. So, yeah, I have not done the John Cusack high fidelity thing and gone back to all my exes.
I love the one he's like, number five. We'll skip right to number five. Oh, she was nice and was amicable and whatever, and that was fine. I just wanted to bump Laura out purposely.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when she finally makes it, you made the top five.
Yeah. Great film.
I like to list things. I like, yeah, that idea of making like all the lists.
List totally me. As a kid, I used to make lists about... I told you. I think I told Brian. I make lists about bubblegum when I was a kid, like which bubblegums I liked the best. It was fucking what weird. What was
number one?
Rainblow was up there.
Rainblow. Dude. Because it had blow in it?
Yeah. Rainblow? it was the Easter egg carton of gum was like awesome. It was only happened during Easter. I wasn't like just typical bullshit. I did have a couple.
Where did Fruit Stripe?
Then? Fruit Stripe fucking sucks.
Oh, fuck you.
Those are gross.
Fruit Stripe Thank is great. Thank
you. You're a Southerner. Get out of here. Dump Mr. Pibb.
Fuck off. I'm a Southerner. I'm a Midwestern.
It's south from Maine. So put it that way.
It's south. Fucking everything south is Maine. It's a
Canadian, eh?
Big League Chew was the best gum, and I have missing teeth to prove it.
Big League Chew is good. You have missing teeth?
No, it's not.
I have a couple missing teeth.
Damn. I almost had one when I hit the figure skate in my mouth.
You gotta bring up Castaway, huh?
Yeah, for Joel.
Talk about elitism. We brought that up in our conversation on elitism and how I'm probably a film elitist.
I mean, you hate Citizen Kane.
You know, I don't know, because like, apparently you can't like Only God Forgives. Yeah. You're pretentious if you do. So
I like it. I'm far from, I think.
Pretentious?
I think I'm far from it.
Now I remember the words that customer used in the movie. Underappreciated scholars. That's what we think we all are.
Yeah.
Underappreciated scholars.
That was Alex Desert, by the way. He was on the original Flash TV show, and he's fucking awesome.
You're right.
He's fucking dick.
He's dicky.
You're dicking out right now.
He played a blind guy in Becker.
Oh my god. He's still dicking.
Ted Danson sitcom.
What a dick. What a great dick.
You're a great dick. Because I don't even fucking know who that guy is.
Hey, I loved him.
In the movie. High Fidelity. I just watched it this morning.
Oh, he was the guy who bought the record. Never mind.
That guy?
Yes.
Oh.
We have to quantify by color.
Well, yeah, because I don't remember anyone else buying a record except for that guy.
Yeah, they never let anyone else buy a record.
Yeah.
No, we don't have it.
That was a joke, guys. If you heard that, I tried to say it really quiet so Jamie wouldn't put it in there.
Like everything else you said?
Jamie's going to
put like it everything in. Else I said, that's a joke.
It's like Louis C.K.'s whole bit about being white and not wanting to go to the future. White people are going to get fucked in the ass. Mm-hmm.
All right, Elon Musk, right? Right.
Yeah.
He's a white guy. What if he's secretly racist and he's trying to get all the white people to Mars? What if?
Is that with the little revelation that he wants to send a million people to Mars?
How would that be? Like, all of a sudden they get it set up and they're gonna, like, they do a few flights over and like it's all white people and then people come out about it and then all of a sudden Elon Musk comes out and he's like, yeah, I'm racist. I only want white people on Mars. What would people say then?
I think he's secretly anti-racist, because if he sends all the white people to Mars, then a lot of our problems would probably be solved.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for it.
Well, the first missions, people haven't been prepared to die, so...
If he's like, hey, all you rich industrialist CEO, white bankers and shit, we are so important, we're going to send you to Mars.
Yeah!
And then they put them all in...
And then Elon Musk...
Airstrike missile.
And then it just blows up in the distance.
Then Elon Musk is the richest person on Earth. It's like Highlander. Like, he's just removing all of the others. He's becoming the one. The only rich white man on Earth.
I support this plan by Elon Musk. To send all the...
some really nice, rich white people.
Probably, but I think the majority of them aren't.
That's stereotyping.
It's
you're majoritizing or generalizing.
Why do we do this?
We could put Donald Trump on there and just send him.
Oh, we should just put him on a fucking missile and just blow up in the sky. Done. Put a stupid sign with him. Dick.
Can we add Hillary Clinton to that too?
Let's send her too.
Let's send a whole bunch of fucks.
Let's send all of Congress.
All of Congress. Yeah.
And they're so full of themselves that they would believe that.
It's to save us.
It's to save humanity. We gotta send you to Mars.
Still a true statement.
Nope.
Yeah.
I know who we need to send.
Who?
Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt.
Sure. I appreciate you bringing back the movies. Yeah. Get off this weird tangent.
Okay, Jamie. You like Chris Pratt?
Yeah, he's pretty fun.
You like Jennifer Lawrence?
I think she's attractive and she's an okay actress at times.
So what do you think of Passengers?
I'm excited. I love sci-fi. I told you. Did I not tell you? Why don't you peek the mic some more? Did I not tell you that I love sci-fi no matter how cheesy it is. I watched a lot of Netflix sci-fi movies last year. Some are okay. Surprisingly.
I hate both of those.
Of course you do. Yeah. Elitist.
Because what kind of fucking acting do they do? Look at my face.
Michael Sheen is great. He plays that robot.
Yeah, but is he the main character?
No.
No. Because he doesn't have the face and the money.
Okay.
Okay.
This is... John, you can close anything.
Okay, you can close? I was going to let you guys go because it'll be a nice bonus episode.
It's a waste of time.
Let's do it. Waste of time episode. Bonus episode where we just talk about Passengers.
And sending people
and
to
judge
Mars.
Things we haven't seen yet.
Yes.
Yeah. Surprise, surprise.
Because people didn't do that with Batman versus Superman or Suicide Squad. I'm saying now, Passengers is going to be a shit movie.
I think it'll be like 65%. It'll be okay. I'm not saying it'll be great.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to be great. But I'm just, from the internet, but a lot of people have been saying like, oh, this looks like a really great movie.
The idea has been done so many times. I mean, Pandorum to an effect, to a lesser extent.
Well,
I mean, a lot of films have done this idea where people wake up in the middle of transport and like, what do?
If they tried to do like a Solaris, you know, Tarkovsky kind of thing about two people being the only people waking up before the journey's over and basically they're going to die by the time that it reaches their destination and trying to accept that. But then, like, the movie turns into this whole thing about the ship is hurtling into the sun. And it's just like, fuck off. Like, I like sci-fi that focuses on the human condition, not just about space is dangerous.
So the plot is Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence wake up early.
Yes.
And the ship is hurtling towards the sun. Or is it just...
That's a really weird sun. Is it a different sun? Not the sun. That'd be a short trip. They've been flying for 30 years. They woke up.
Because I agree. It would be more interesting if they...
I think they're flying into something. Yeah, I think maybe.
Beetlejuice.
But it would be more interesting if they woke up and the ship is still on course to its destination.
Yeah.
But they just...
They have to live.
They have to live. Because they would just fuck all the time.
Yeah.
I would watch that.
Well, it's just the thing about being, you know, have that where it starts out. Like, everyone be like, yeah, that'd be really fun. And those characters would be like, yeah, that's going to be really fun. We can just fuck around all the place. We got this whole place to ourselves. But then by the time it's like, you know, everything's amazing and perfect, eventually there's going to be a breaking point. And you're going to become jaded and be like, you know, too much of a good thing is a bad thing. And so then having them deal with that.
Well, they could just have a bunch of kids and then the kids can have kids.
They'll live on the new planet.
And then they'll live on the new planet as inbred.
Well, yeah.
I just realized, yeah.
Well, just like have... You know, have a kid or a few kids. Mm. So then when everyone else wakes up, they're like, Who are you? And see, that, like, I feel like that would be a lot interesting, you know, concept in watching that rather than just being, we're two people who woke up. Now we have to fall in love and we have to save this ship so it doesn't fly into the sun. Like, fucking hell. Like,
yeah.
I don't give a
but
shit.
There's gotta be danger.
Well, exactly, because you gotta hit that mass audience. Like, goddamn, we get our, you know, ideas tested.
This should have been a topic.
It will be in August's... No.
No. Okay. This is the bonus episode.
Bonus.
Passengers looks like shit.
You've heard it here first. Passengers looks like shit.
People even say it was all right.
I just said that.
That's what Jimmy said.
Oh, yeah. The fact that you're excited for it.
I love sci-fi. To a fault.
Watch Lost in Space.
I didn't like that.
I loved that one.
I liked it.
I don't know. I have a hard time with old cheesy stuff. Some stuff I can get into. Like, Land of Lost was cool.
I love old cheesy shit, but I can't watch new cheesy shit. Because it's just like...
Okay, save it. That's a topic.
You do better.
He won't do it.
No. Because I got
close
a different topic.
Just close it out. Okay. He's talking too much.
I'm sorry. Let's get a timestamp. All right. Probably from 47 to 05.
From 52.
There you go. Just cut it out.
No, I'm going to do something with it.
Okay. All right.
I'll make Let's porn sounds in the background.
Close it out.
And this has been the Not Quite Hollywood podcast.
Has it?
It has been.
Okay.
Join us later this week when we tackle our topics, which I don't know if we have any.
I got one.
I might have one.
Fuck, I don't think I do.
Don't worry, we have a few days.
Jamie fucks.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And Jamie has his movie.
And his movie too.
You have that.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Oh.
I'll talk about that next episode.
All right. Yeah, all right.
Until then, thank you for listening. You can find us on Facebook, Not Quite Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Our Gmail is...
NotQuitePod@gmail.com
And you can find August on an offender list somewhere?
Offender? What the fuck?
Sexual predator list.
Why am I sexual predator?
Registry.
Registry.
Oh my god.
Watch out for this guy. He'll fuck you up.
Not true.
Why does everyone think I'm a pedophile?
I didn't say pedophile.
I didn't say. I just said
you
a
sex offender.
You assumed it was a list.
Oh. I'm sorry, because I wasn't thinking about raping women, because I don't rape women.
Anyway, we'll see you guys.
Bye.